Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
What's going on, everybody? So glad that you're joining me for another Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast episode. Very excited, as always. My special guest, he comes from a company called 8x8. His name is Tony Poor, and 8x8 is a telecom company focused on call centers and the call center industry, which makes sense that he would come on the show and kind of share his experiences. Tony has been, he manages the channel contact center solutions team at 8x8. He's been with them for 4 years, spent over 20 years designing customer experience and consulting on best practices for contact centers. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk to him about contact centers, call centers, sales teams, technology, tech stack. There's a lot of important things that I know are vital for call centers, especially for sales teams, that I am not great at picking the right ones, but I know it's important, and that's where Tony's going to come in. Tony, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So like I mentioned just now, I know technology is important. There's so many different options, and not for this to be the 8x8 show, but I think one of the big things is when I look at this, especially as a consultant, where I just wanted to dive right into is maybe a little bit of your background experience, but then let's talk about the reasons why call centers don't make the changes they could in their technology. For me, it seems like it's overwhelming, and that may be one of the reasons why. But like, where do you come from in your background? And then where do you see, you know, the challenges being for call centers, contact centers?
So without dating myself too much, I started my career working at Accenture, and one of my first projects was building out the back-end call center for American Express. So kind of tying in what their agents were doing on the front end with all of the back-end mainframe processing. From there, ultimately wound up working for a couple of smaller vendors in providing things like call recording and outbound dialing in the contact center space. Just kind of leveraged what I learned from the Accenture world. And starting at about 2007 or 8, really flipped from being on the developer side of the house to being more like a pre-sales support side of things. So I wound up working at a small company that got bought by Mitel. You might know them if you're in the UCaaS space at all. Mitel's a fairly large vendor. I worked with Mitel for about 4.5-5 years, and then had an opportunity to come over to 8x8 about 4 years ago, almost to the day, actually. About 4 years ago, and I've been working here ever since, kind of driving our channel organization and enabling them with more knowledge around contact center. So I guess if we're going to pinpoint it, my specific background has been on the development side, and then with smaller vendors leading up to now fairly large vendors, supporting different contact center applications and providing either the full suite of products or in some cases smaller sets of products. And that's kind of how my experience led me to 8x8. But I have been doing it for about 20 years, and it's always been with some sort of contact center focus, even though I came out of school with more of a computer science and an engineering degree. And I think to your point, you're right. There are a lot of reasons that people might not upgrade contact centers. For a long time, I think one of the biggest challenges was if you wanted to upgrade, let's say you had an old Avaya on-prem system and you wanted to do an upgrade to the Avaya, well, that meant not only upgrading Avaya, but it meant upgrading the other 10 applications that touched the contact center software, right? You had to upgrade your PBX, maybe your call recording. If you had workforce management tools or anything like that, you'd have to upgrade every server. And something that might have been small on just the PBX side had these cascading effects that would impact everything around their computer telephony. And so you'd had people that just kind of kept putting it off or putting it off. And then as the switch to cloud became more prevalent, I think people are just trying to ride out that investment in the software that they've purchased. And then eventually they're going to switch to cloud and realize, oh, this probably would have been a lot easier to do 4 or 5 years ago. and not have to worry about managing 25 different applications all at once. But it's usually just, hey, I paid good money for this and I'm going to ride it until it dies. That's the attitude I see a lot.
Yeah. And that makes total sense. I mean, obviously also could date myself in, you know, the era of, you know, desktop phones and the right. server closet and all of that thing, you know, even having reps accusing other people of the fact that they get the better leads is because they're closer to the server or closer to, you know, where the right. technology is. I've been accused of that as well, as I was yeah. closer to the internet, which is why I closed more deals. Because I was closer to the hub, which is obviously funny. But that is an interesting thing where, you know, all of that sunk cost, all of that investment, mm-hmm. and what used to be a huge undertaking to change yeah. one thing, like you said, it was just a domino effect. And then how that's still kind of a remnant in people's minds where they don't want to change their phone system or their setup or something like that versus, yeah. you know, what's available now in the cloud. And obviously there is a balance there too, because, you know, it's kind of like, if you're selling CRMs, okay, well, you could just upgrade your CRM and it's going to be better or faster. Yeah, but everybody's used to it. And there's also that
right.
change that they don't want to deal with. Even if it is better long-term, most people don't like change. And
yeah.
where do you see that fit in to the decisions that call centers make or don't make, I guess?
It is still a factor, kind of amazingly. The number of customers that we talk to that you know, they say to themselves, yeah, we want to upgrade. We want newer technology. We want to be able to leverage AI and machine learning and bots and all these things. But we want to design the experience to look exactly like the old platform that we've had for 10 years, or they want to support the same exact functions. And, you know, that's not always a huge roadblock, but it's a paradigm shift for a lot of people that, you know, they're used to the fact that there's an orange button on the left corner of the screen, and that's what they click to finish the call or to kick off a transaction or something like that. And so you get a lot of requests for, hey, well, I want to still have my orange button because that's just kind of ingrained in my workflow. A big piece of what we have to do, I mean, not just what we do at 8x8, but I think I could probably speak for a lot of our competition, you know, is sit down and understand, well, why is the orange button or whatever piece of functionality, why is that so critical to you? If we get caught up in the idea of I'm just going to replicate feature for feature, not only are you not going to get the most out of what the software or the application can do, but you're also just burning all these resources to kind of retrofit something that made sense 10 years ago. I always try to just get to the bottom of it and say, you know, what's the actual business goal? Why do we want to have this piece of functionality? Because reality is I could probably come up with a more elegant or more efficient way of doing it if we can get past the idea of, oh, I want the screen to look like this, or I want the buttons to be here, or I want the reports to be identical. You know, change is challenging, but sometimes it's a really good thing, and it'll provide so many other opportunities if we just get past the idea of, oh, it's got to look or feel a certain way. But it is still something that comes up a surprising amount. You know, I don't want to go buy a car that looks like the car that I had in 2005, but people want that technology experience sometimes. It's unusual.
Well, and I think there's a lot to that. Just talking about this concept of change, which is important for what you focus on, but just call centers, owners and leaders in general who are listening to this, is to keep in mind. I mean, one of the biggest things I have looked for, noticed, especially in my clients, but in centers in general, is there a culture of change or an openness for change? And the one big thing that I've always done as a leader and or as a consultant is ensure that people understand that change is a constant. Everything is going to be changing because it's going to be improving in some way. However, the goal isn't to just change for change's sake, right? It's not just, hey, it's Tuesday and I had this idea and this spasm and let's go ahead and just move everyone's desks and let's find a new platform, right? Like, no, we're not... Yeah. And the change that's made organizationally, technology, systems, processes, scripts, whatever that might be, is for a reason in order to improve and get better. And hopefully everyone understands that and they're on board that if there's a change, it's for that. And it's interesting hearing you talk about the orange button thing. I'm just imagining someone as an adult saying, I loved my childhood home. That was my good memories. I want you to rebuild my childhood home exactly, and then I want to live in that forever, like a museum. And you know, like you said, your car from 2005, it's not necessarily what you want to be driving right now, and there's a reason. And of course, every time everyone gets a new cell phone, it's different. The buttons are in different places. It does different things, and it's generally better. And so where do you have that culture in an organization where everyone goes, okay, if we're changing this, there's a reason, it's going to be better, assuming that's the goal.
Yeah, I agree 100%. There's got to be an embrace of change. And I think if you look at most contact centers, not all fit this model, but a lot of them, you know, the average attrition is like between 30 and 45%. So there's, you know, a pretty constant amount of change just coming through the people that are working there. I think if your mindset is my employees can't take change, you know, a third of their coworkers probably leave every year anyways. And there's all sorts of internal and interpersonal change that's happening in the contact center. I don't think it's a huge leap to say, hey, let's make some technological change. And it's, you know, usually after some conversations, everyone gets on the same page and realizes, hey, if I change this one thing, it might be temporarily frustrating, but I'm unlocking 25 new features that are going to make me far more efficient. It's going to make my agents more money. It's going to make my agents better at what they do. They're going to like their job more, you know, hopefully. It's better all around. And usually the resistance to change disappears pretty quick once they realize that, oh yeah, I'm getting rid of my childhood home and my race car bed. But it means that I get to sleep in a much larger bed, and I have my own private bathroom that I'm not sharing with my brother. You know, there's give and take, and there's a lot of value in growing and expanding. Right.
And now that makes me think, man, I need a queen sized race car bed. That's what I need. Let's just blend both worlds. Then now we're talking. And I think really, you know, back to the change side, it's just about change management, setting expectations. And the biggest tip I give to anyone is if you're going to make a change in your organization or with a team, is always help them understand the why, right? It's not just, hey, we want to change our telephone technology just for the sake of change or because it's cheaper, but it's like, it's going to be better and it has these features. And to your point with the high turnover, obviously you don't want to leverage that or expect that, but you know, the people who are still with you are with you for the right reasons. The people who aren't with you, don't worry about upsetting them with the change, because if they're not successful, then how much of that really comes into play with your decision. You know, the other part in thinking about why somebody wouldn't change or upgrade their technology or, you know, any part of their sales operation, I alluded to it in the very beginning, which is just the overwhelming number of choices. You know, you've even used some acronyms that I still struggle with what they mean. I know what I want as a consultant when I'm working with a client, but there's UCAS and there's CCAS and there's all these things. And then there's, you know, you've mentioned a bunch of things where it's like, if somebody's not familiar with that, a lot of times it's easier to do nothing than try to even figure it out. And how do you address that? Or what's the best way for a call center to be thinking about what they need or want?
You know, I think that if you're in a spot as whether you are a manager of a call center or you own a call center, if you are overwhelmed by the choices out there, I think it's probably best to find whether it's a consultant or a value-added reseller that knows the industry well and can talk to you about the differences and can provide a little bit of that consultative approach for you. I mean, we can do that for you at 8x8. There are plenty of partners as consultants like yourself. There are people who have that level of industry knowledge. They can come in and probably get a pretty good snapshot of where you're doing well and where you're failing. The other good thing to keep in mind is so many of the players in our space are not just focusing in one particular area of technology, right? There is a real solid trend within the industry to say, we're going to consolidate a lot of these applications together and integrate them and have a single consumer experience and a single employee experience so that you're not having to manage 25 different applications. So like with, you know, from an 8x8 standpoint, we've got the contact center. We also provide the telephony, and we provide, if you also want to have video chat and meetings and things like that, we provide all that under one roof. So if you bring us into a discussion, we're going to be able to say, hey, even though you just asked about this one area of contact center or this one area of maybe PBX upgrades or something like that, hey, we noticed that you have these are the people who could benefit from some of this technology. Let's tell you about it and let you make your choices. Most consumers want to do that level of research before they buy anyways. I forget the exact stat, but it's something like 2/3 of consumers are doing, you know, they're doing their own homework, and they'd rather do like a self-service or a self-discovery than talk to a salesperson and just get sold on something. So I think that there's a lot of value in you know, doing a little bit of homework, but I don't think you have to be an expert in it. Talk to a consultant, talk to somebody who sells it and knows it and can give you a little bit of guidance. Even if they give you a couple options, it'll make your life easier to choose from 3 or 4 different products as opposed to 100. And a good consultant is going to know that market well enough to know like, hey, this is a great fit for what you're trying to do. This other one might not have the features you're after, or this might look attractive because it's got a shiny interface, but it doesn't have international calling, or you know, whatever the different details are. I think working with a consultant or somebody who's, you know, ingrained in that environment can really provide a lot of guidance.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned about the how many people research either to make purchasing decisions on their own or prior to even talking to somebody. And for me, a lot of that comes down to the fact that, like you said, people don't want to be sold or try to be talked into things. Or even like myself, I will hesitate filling out a form or reaching out to a company because then I know I just get put into this campaign of getting calls and emails forever. And it's like, I know I'm good. I wanted to stop. And you do that enough times where you just, I don't want to fill out anything because I don't even want to start that cadence, as it's called. And I think that's something for people to keep in mind, especially from the sales side. If you're selling something, like what are you doing to people that might be turning them off? And what's that customer, user, buyer sales experience like? And then obviously, if you're looking for some help, you know, just understand that's part of the game is going to happen. When you think about, like, let's say the call center owner, the person who's listening to this that says, okay, I think I might be due to upgrade my tech stack, right? Let's say specifically, since we're talking about communications and telephony, let's talk about that. Is there a good question or questions that they should be thinking or asking?
Well, you know, so if I'm a call center owner and I'm thinking to myself, you know, it might be time to upgrade. I mean, there's any number of triggers. The biggest one that came up was, you know, within the last 18 months was the pandemic, right? There were a lot of people that one day everyone was in the office and the next day everyone was not. And people had to figure out how to, you know, pivot really quickly. And our business, you know, I think at first I thought, oh gosh, the pandemic's going to really slow things down. And then, you know, the next 6 weeks of my life were nonstop because it was people saying, I've got this old on-prem platform that's great when my people are in the office, but now that they're not in the office, I have no way to forward calls to any other location. So, you know, the fact that the old model wasn't working, that was a huge, huge impetus for change for a lot of people, right? And I think that that also brought forward, okay, hey, as long as I'm going to make this change to allow to, you know, to move into the cloud, because it gives you way more flexibility on where your agents or where your team members are located. That was a huge impetus. I think that anytime you say to yourself, I'm not able to support my customers in the way that I would like to, or I'm not able to support my customers in the way that I'm used to being treated by other companies, right? I think about myself personally, and it's a little weird because I work for a company that provides telecom, but if the only way that I can reach out to a company is over the phone, I'm probably going to look for a competitor, right? I don't want to call you and I don't want you to call me. My preferred method of communication is text-based, right? I want to send an SMS message and then my phone will ding in 3 minutes when I get a reply. And in the meantime, I can do whatever else I want. If that's your mindset as a consumer and you're not offering that within your own contact center, that's when the alarm bell should be going off. Like, hey, if I can't do this with my current tech stack, I need to figure out a way to do it, because not only is that technology available, but that's how people want to communicate, right? I'm not in the minority. Most people would prefer to not use the telephone. Now, it's still the number one way that people interact with contact centers, but that's not by choice. That's because that's the option that most contact centers give, and they haven't all fully embraced chat or SMS or social media or email or whatever those other options are.
Yeah. And that's such a good point, especially because you and I are in an age demographic that doesn't represent the younger generations currently.
Right. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm really young. I'm only like 21.
Well, then you are in that young demographic, you know, where it's assumed that the younger demographic doesn't want to pick up the phone and call. Right. And that, you know, the older generations are used to that and that's how they want to deal with it. But it's just not true as a group. And then I also think about, it depends on what it is that is being sold or, you know, dealt with, where there's some products and services where no matter what age the person is, they still want to get on the phone and get the information, right? There's very few people, let's say, that are going to buy a house, get a mortgage online, especially first time they've ever gotten a mortgage, without speaking to someone and without getting help and going through the process. Now, if you've done it enough times before, you're like, whatever, I got it. It's right. Just give me the paperwork, I'll fill it out. It's like, it's not rocket science. But if you haven't done it before, it's a big deal. And so I think your point is great about you as a customer. How do you want, or what do you want your options to be? One warning, though, I would say is I see a lot of companies go too far to the other extreme of only thinking about themselves and their internal culture, and then picking a channel or a few channels where they go all into that. Example being tech companies, where they literally have no phone number because they don't ever want to talk to anybody. And then that is leaving out that portion of people who want help or need help from a phone standpoint. And so you want to make sure you don't go all in on one or the other, not all phone, not all SMS, but have that omni-channel approach. I love that advice.
Yeah, I think you want to, you have to put yourself in the shoes of your consumers. What do your consumers want to do? What is their preferred method of communication? And if you're not providing all those options, that consumer is going to look elsewhere, right? And you know, each customer knows their demographics better than everybody else. But when we get those customers that say things like, "Oh, I don't want to have any automation. I want everything to come through the phone, and I want it to be answered by a live body." It's a delicate conversation to have, but sometimes we have to just say, "Look, that your mindset is, it's factually incorrect, right? I can point to the numbers and say, look, your customers, they want other methods of communication. Even if they're on the older end of the spectrum, my mom uses Facebook, right? I have older relatives that use social media and channels other than the phone. So to just assume that your way is the only way is kind of a broken model. And then when you talk about companies going to the other end of the extreme and it's just, you know, it's all online or it's all bot driven, I think one of the mistakes that tends to get made is that the communication is still impersonal. I think that a good automated design can still have a lot of personalization, right? Like when I call American Airlines, they know that it's me that's calling, right? Even though I know it's a robot, the robot answers and says, "Hi, Tony. It looks like you have a flight scheduled for later today." And it's like, "Yeah, actually I do. And coincidentally, that's why I'm calling, because I have to change it or it's delayed or, you know, whatever the case is." That's a personalized experience that's driven by a bot. That's a lot less frustrating than just a robot that says blankly, "Tell me what you want to do." And it's like, "Oh, come on, man, I'm a VIP customer, or I've been working with you for 20 years. Why are you making this more work for me? You've got my data. You know what I like to do. Leverage that."
Yeah. And I think that's important both from a sales, from a service standpoint. Obviously, we're talking about, you know, scalable call center sales on this podcast. It can apply to both. I think the key is that, and this is my go-to for most things as far as responses, it's now 2021. There's no reason things should be manual in most aspects of business, or for salespeople, or for the customer journey, for the, you know, prospective client journey, where again, it's that, "Oh, this is you. What can I help you with?" Even if it's like, "We know who you are," you shouldn't have to tell me who you are if it's the phone number, and confirm. And the sales environment, like you said, where it feels personal, even if you know it's not, then that helps. Going back to something you just said about the companies, you know, your potential clients who say, "We want everything to be manual phone mode, where there's no automation, there's no omni-channelness." And what do you think's driving that? Is that just a stuck in the past and this is what we've always done? Do you think them as a customer, like, they only want the phone and they literally don't want chatbots, and so they're looking at it that same lens?
You know,
obviously speculating, because you don't know exactly what's in their heads, but
no, in the handful of instances that stand out, you know, there's those customers or prospective customers where it's like, you know, you go in and you think you're going to do a really good job and they're like, no, we really just want phone because that's what our customers want. I think what it boils down to, the handful of cases where they've been really headstrong about that, they're typically privately held companies, and they're companies that have been owned and operated and managed by one person. Even if they're relatively large organizations today, it's still very much driven by that CEO or that founder mentality. On the one hand, they founded the company. They got it to where it is. Their business acumen and their mindset got it to the size that it is today. But if that company was founded in 1990 or whatever with those ideals and that mindset and is resilient to change, yeah, it still might be going great now, but your brand is going to be eroded if you're not taking into account what your customers want. So, you know, without painting with too broad of a stroke, I feel like the companies that tend to do that are, it's headstrong ownership or leadership that has gotten where they're at because they said my way or the highway. And they don't realize that now they're at this inflection point where it's like, okay, well, it's your way or the highway. What it really boils down to is it's your way, or I could go to Amazon, or I could go to any number of other competitors that are going to give me the service that I want. Cause I could probably get that same product in a different package because now those options are there. 20 years ago, you might've been the only game in town. Now I've got plenty of other options and we're not even going to have a conversation about it. I'm just going to go, right?
Hey, it's Jason here. We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, are you ready to help your inside sales team close more deals? In my experience, there's a certain percentage of your team that acts more like order takers than sales professionals. The first step to creating a scalable sales team is to equip your reps with the right mindset and proven strategies to transform them into quota breakers. To build a team of authentic persuaders that will crush their goals, email Jason at cutterconsultinggroup.com or go to www.cutterconsultinggroup.com. Yeah. And when you're explaining that model, I can totally visualize that. And one example that just popped in my head is looking at Yellow Pages, phone book ads,
yeah,
right? And placement mm-hmm. in there, where there were so many companies where back in the day, not too long ago, that was the only way other than billboards and maybe TV and radio. Like yeah. you were in the phone book. And if you're in the phone book, people were looking for, let's say, an attorney or whatever. That's where they made their decisions, was based on yeah. the ads that were in there, and the bigger the ad, the better. And then as the internet came out and just kind of, you know, put that, it just made it less effective. Then, you know, there were still companies who were like, no, we spend this, we do the Yellow Pages and that's all we do. And we're not going to change. And it's similar to what you're talking about where,
yeah.
okay, so you can say, we're just do everything over the phone because it's the way we've always done it. Yeah. But the consumers are different, and you can draw that line in the sand if you'd like. You might just limit your growth and your revenue, your scalability by doing that. So I know we just kind of talked about this and we were looking at the reasons why. If I'm a prospective customer of yours, right? Mm-hmm. Or if I'm looking at some kind of solution, I know that I need to make a change. What you're talking about is, hey, I want to upgrade my system such that I can serve my customers like I like to be served, or at least give them options, even if it's not my thing, even if like right. I'm not a text buyer, but I want to give that option so that I can serve everybody. Mm-hmm. What is a great question that I would ask, that a call center owner would ask someone like yourself, or someone, you know, if they're shopping for this kind of technology, what's a great question that when you hear that, you're like, okay, this is good because they're thinking the right thing or they're looking for the right info?
Yeah, it's a tough one because everyone has different needs and requirements. But I think the one that I think prompts the most discussion, and I think gets us to really understand what the organization is after, and it's actually a little bit ironic because I think it's a misguided question, or it kind of shows a little bit of a lack of understanding about maybe how the technology might work. But the question I get a lot is, so what do you do with AI? What's your AI product look like? Or how can I automate this process? So when I get, I want customers to think about automation. I want customers to think about ways that they can let technology do some of the heavy lifting for them, still offering that personalized experience. But when they ask a question about, hey, tell me about AI or automation, it's misguided because there is no just off the shelf AI product, right? There's no off the shelf bot. The way that you might want to use a bot, or, you know, whether it's a chat bot or a voice bot, could be totally different than somebody else. So a lot of the AI and the automation that we talk about is more of like a toolkit where we can say, hey, let's build this together, or I'm going to give you the toolkit. You can build it yourself or we'll build it for you. But we're building something custom out of whether it's APIs or whether it's integrations to, you know, to Google or IBM, Watson, whatever that might be. The introductory question about automating processes, I think, is a really good delineator between kind of an enterprise level contact center and just, I need a call manager. I need some way to distribute calls, and it's basic. That seems to be the inflection point where customers who are really looking to make strides will ask about automation, even if that question is a little bit misguided. I'll usually flip it around and say, okay, rather than look at it as, hey, here's the off-the-shelf automation product that you have to tinker with and make it fit, let's talk about what you want to automate. What processes right now make your agents crazy? What takes up too much of your time, right? How much, whether it's you building reports as a manager, whether it's your agents having to answer questions about how much widgets cost 100 times a day, that mundane stuff is what makes contact centers grind to a halt. So if you can identify those things and talk about, hey, how can we automate this stuff? How can we streamline this process? We're probably going to have a really solid conversation and come up with some really good ideas together. And I'll say that for 8x8, frankly, I'll say that for a lot of our competitors that are in the, you know, in the larger space. If we can start to have a conversation about how we're going to actually improve and automate some of these things without sacrificing the personalization and the options that your customers want, that is a recipe for a great contact center discussion. On the flip side, if the contact center that you're talking to or the salesperson that you're talking to, if they just want to start putting quotes in front of you and start demonstrating things, you're probably rushing it. You're only seeing what they choose to show you. I would rather have a conversation around what your overall process is like, and then we can get to that endpoint together rather than just saying, here's a quote. Right? If you're just asking for quotes because you think, hey, I need an agent license and that's that, I mean, you're going to get a lot of quotes. A lot of salespeople will be happy to talk to you, but you're not solving the core problem unless you really understand all the technology that's out there. Just asking for quotes is probably not going to get you very far.
Yeah. And I think that really goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, which was, you know, why call center owners, leaders don't make the change and aren't changing. My guess is one factor to that is that we all have, right? I will include myself as a leader in organization, purchased something, some technology that was the latest or shiniest or check the box that even if it's the owner gets a bug in their ear, talk to somebody at a conference, heard about, let's say in your example, AI, and says, we need that. Get me AI. Okay.
Yeah.
For what? I don't care. We just need it because I heard it's the best thing. And you know, they're doing it too. So let's do it.
Yeah.
And then what happens is misguided, especially if the buyer isn't educated and the seller only cares, you're selling the AI, only cares about what they're selling and jumps into the demo and isn't prescribing the best solution and ensuring success. Is you buy it, you get it implemented, nobody uses it, it dies there. Until the owner or whoever's paying for it is super mad that you have this expensive monthly cost and implementation fee for something that was never used. And then what you learn is you only do that once. You only make that decision once. And then usually it's like touching the hot stove. I don't want to do that again. So I'm just not going to buy anything. Right. And I think sometimes that can trigger underlying. People don't always realize it, but that's even in consumers, like I work with call centers that deal with consumers. If consumers get burned when they bought something that didn't work, it's going to make them hesitate. But we've all done that, right? We've all been burned by something we've bought. So I wonder how much of that plays in. And I love your idea of that question being about AI, because either they're thinking smartly and they want to go big with it, or they're chasing shiny objects that are the new hot topic. And it's maybe an indicator that like, you've got to dig deep, or they're gonna buy something and then blame you for it when it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, and kind of the flip side of that, you can go the opposite direction from a buying standpoint. There are companies that kind of, I'm sure you've run across these guys too. They're serial RFP companies, right? Every 2 years they put out an RFP. They've got 150,000 questions that they want to have answered, none of which relate back to what the problem that they're actually trying to solve. The questions relate to the technology they've already got. And hey, can you report on this? Can you do this? But they don't really explain why. And you go through this RFP process. And if you're lucky enough or unlucky enough in some instances to win, and it's been implemented for 6 months, and then all of a sudden they say, well, how come it doesn't do this one thing? Well, you know, you didn't ask. Your RFP was so pointed on these weird one-off technology scenarios that you didn't ask, hey, how do we manage agent attrition, or what can your system do to help us mitigate attrition, right? That there's no switch that I flip that turns the attrition button on or off. But if that's a big problem for you, we can have a conversation and talk about the technology that's going to solve it. But it rarely gets addressed if I'm just answering 50 questions about how call recording works, right? That there's this weird notion that the more information you have is somehow going to make the sale better. It rarely, rarely does. Gigantic RFPs are usually the most complicated and least satisfied customers that I deal with. And it's because they,
From your experience, because again, you've been playing this game for 20 years in various ways. Why do you think companies do those or put out those RFPs, those requests for proposals?
I mean, in some instances, they're required to, right? I mean, government entities have to do it in a lot of cases. They're required to get a certain number of bids. They know that if they just go back and talk to their vendor is going to say, well, I recommend you go with 8x8, or I recommend you go with company X. And that's that. And maybe there's a corporate policy that says we have to look at multiple vendors so we're not getting gouged price-wise, or we're, you know, we make sure we're getting the appropriate exposure to technology. So there's the bureaucracy of it. That's one piece. And then I think there's also just a subset of consumers that have done that for a while. They like having the vendors come to them and present on the specific things that they've asked for. So in their mind, it works. I mean, if your goal is to get through a sales process and check a bunch of boxes, then yeah, I guess the RFP process works. If your goal is to get through the sales process and create a new solution that helps define the direction of your business, that RFP does not always address those things. They rarely address the strategic objectives of the business. It's usually like, hey, we want to make sure we can do X, Y, and Z without context of why. And in a lot of cases, I mean, think about, I mean, going back to the people that are reluctant to make changes, they want to buy this new platform, but they want it to look like their old platform. Well, the RFP is predicated on this technology that they understand that's 10 years old, right? So they say, I want it to do these things and also have AI and automation. I mean, okay, we can do that, but that's not a solution. That is, you just are going and shopping off the shelf and hoping that we check all the boxes. And that's rarely a recipe for a successful contact center.
Yeah. I really like my car from 2005, but I would like it to be a self-driving electric vehicle.
Exactly.
You just do that, make that happen. I wonder too if the RFP process is a defense mechanism against salespeople, right? Where instead of like, you're selling it, I'm going to put you in a box, vendors, and then you've got to play by my rules, and then I can control the outcome without feeling like you're selling me or I'm pressured into buying because I'm controlling the process. And again, obviously there's government entities where they've got to, you know, be careful. They've got rules they've got to follow, obviously, because it's taxpayers' money. But I just wonder how much of that is triggered by salespeople, the old school salesperson who's just selling what they want to sell and making the big commissions, and then people feeling burned, and then just this RFP world, which I know that you don't enjoy. If it's non-government, non-required, non-like part of their thing, what would be your suggestion to companies as a better way than the RFP when they can?
So I think maybe the idea that the RFP should go away, that's maybe not the right approach. I think that it's just a redesign of what kind of questions you want to ask in an RFP. If an RFP is designed to say, here are our goals and objectives of the contact center, and then here is the technology that we hope to have. I want to make sure I concisely explain this. If you ask 25 questions about very specific types of reports or very specific features of the contact center, then you have to write up 25 questions. I have to answer 25 questions. You have to read 25 of my answers, and then you have to convert that into some sort of scoring mechanism that says, yes, Tony's company either passes or fails and moves to the next round. That's a really inefficient process. Instead, we should just, like, let's say that it's around a web chat, right? It should be, do you support web chat? Yes or no? If you do, then let's have another conversation and talk about what that means. If you don't, like, the RFP should be about weeding out people, but I think we've got so many questions that we're going to use to weed people out that these RFPs become unwieldy. If I was going to design one from scratch, I would probably look at the core pieces of functionality that I would want to have. And it would not be the specifics of how web chat works, but do you have web chat? Do you support workforce management and scheduling tools? Do you have speech-enabled IVRs? And they could really just be yes, no questions. Nobody ever reads. I get questions. It's like, describe your reporting capabilities. Okay, well, you know, a similar question would be like, describe the internet. Well, how much do you want to know? Like, how I could give you a 100-page report guide if you want, or I could just say, yeah, we've got all your basic contact center reports. And if you've got concerns or questions, let's talk about them later. But let's get the table stakes out of the way. You could probably fit an RFP in one page. Weed out the players that don't fit the bill. There are plenty of consultative resources, like, and you may or may not be a fan of the different analyst documents, but let's pick Gartner out. There, some people love Gartner, some people loathe Gartner. But look at Gartner. If you can see who the major players are with a successful track record and say, yeah, these guys are in the quadrant. These other guys have been around for 3 weeks and are doing business out of a garage. I'm going to ignore that smaller organization and maybe focus on the one that's got a track record. So understand what's important to you and ask those core questions, narrow it down to a smaller list. And again, going back to the idea that you should probably be working with a consultant, they can tell you, hey, if you do this, you're going to get 100 responses. You need to narrow it down. We could probably, without having to go through that process, pick the 5 or 6 candidates that we already know fit that technology. The information is there. We shouldn't have to answer, describe your report capabilities or describe your infrastructure. Everyone's going to answer effectively the same way, which is you've asked a vague enough question. I'm going to give you what you need so that I can get a seat in the next round. Yeah. I didn't solve your problem. Right. So yeah, I would say streamline it considerably. And then once we find some people we like, then we'll get into the weeds.
Yeah. And I love that. And as you're describing that, I'm just visualizing one of those product feature, you know, where there's columns and there's checkboxes of either their own packages or them versus the competitors of what features they have and the boxes they check versus the competitors. And that's really it, right? I mean, that's what you're looking for, like you said, to have that next conversation. Because when you do open-ended questions and you're asking a salesperson to describe their reporting features, of course, they're going to talk about all the amazing things. They're not going to say, well, we don't do reports very well and we don't integrate with this. And you have to export everything and you better have a data scientist because it still sucks when you get it in a spreadsheet. Like no one's going to say that even in the RFP or maybe even when you talk to them. So you're going to need to talk to somebody and then see it and then look at the reports if that's like an important feature. You're not going to, again, the RFP is what I've seen is this just a chance for me to sell you. It's like a resume. It's like picking somebody to work at a company just based on the resume. The resume is a good filter to start, but it's also could be just completely made up, right? And it's only the highlights. It's only what sounds good on paper.
Yeah. And you also, I think if you're writing an RFP, if you can't understand, or as you're writing out the questions, if you don't understand why that is a critical piece of this sales process, right? Like if you say, going back to the reports, if you say, hey, describe your reporting capabilities. If you can't say to yourself, why I need this information, why this data is critical to this RFP for me screening these people out, you shouldn't be asking the question. And if the question as it's written isn't going to address that stuff, then revise the question. If you just want a general thesis about reporting, I can give you that. But if you say to yourself, hey, we are required by law to provide these metrics to a regulatory agency on the 30th of every month, and we need these data points, we need to understand, you know, how you can deliver that or can you deliver that? A company has a lot more insight in how to answer that question. And you're not just going to get some generic copy paste from my marketing page about what our reports do, right?
I completely agree. I mean, if you can be specific in those questions, again, like the interviewing example, you know what you want, you know what doesn't work, you know experiences in the past. And so the question is going to be specific, you know, like the interview question, tell me about a time when you dealt with an upset customer and how did you overcome it, right? I'm looking for a specific thing, not tell me about a time when you spoke to somebody. what do I even do with that, right? So it's so vague. All right, so let's shift gears here with our time left today. So you're dealing with contact centers, call centers, sales teams, all over the place. You've been doing it for a long time. Let's remove the technology piece.
Okay.
But talking about essentially your end customer, which is these call centers, what are the ones who you feel like are doing well right now, let's say 2021, with or without everything in flux, but just in general, what are the ones that you view as successful? What are they doing well, not just tech-wise?
I think that companies that really focus on the satisfaction and the experience for their agents and their employees tend to be really successful. It probably sounds, you know, a little bit of a cliche. You got to take care of your internal people first, and that's going to, a happy agent makes a happy customer. I mean, it's a little bit of a stereotype or a cliche because it's true, right? If you're investing in the success of your employees, that is going to translate to the success of your contact center. We know that attrition is a huge challenge in a lot of contact centers. And we know that, you know, you pay roughly 75% of your budget goes towards agent salaries. And we know that attrition is like somewhere between 30 and 45% year over year. And we know that agents leave because they don't feel like there's any, you know, promotion opportunity. They feel like it's a dead end job and they feel like they're not good at their job. They leave because they're tired of working on 15-year-old technology. Pay is not necessarily the top reason. In fact, there's a lot of studies where pay is not even the top five of reasons why agents leave. So if you're providing an environment that allows the agents to have their personality, allows them to have flexible scheduling, allows them to live the life that they want to live, whether that's working from home remotely or giving them the options to choose their own shifts or giving them the technology they want to use, taking away all the mundane stuff, focusing on the agents generally translates into a very successful contact center. And if you don't focus on that, no matter how much money you throw at the software, if the agents are unhappy with the way that it works, you're going to be frustrated.
Such a good point. And it doesn't sound cliche. I mean, to me, it sounds valuable. That seems like that makes complete sense. I know for me, whenever I interact with a company, I can usually tell or guess what their company culture is like when I'm the customer, based on how the salesperson or anybody interacts. Like, okay, so this is what is acceptable, or this is how people treat people. And it's always an extension. And I can see too, when we get back to this whole technology buying piece, where companies who are like, I have an attrition problem, I have an agent problem, I have a customer satisfaction, I have a employee satisfaction problem, so let me just buy the shiny new toy for them or get them something, you know, maybe upgrade, and that's going to fix it. And it's got to be together, right? Like you can't, you're not going to fix it, right? Like you're not going to make someone happy by buying them a present if they're not happy, right? And giving them a gift. Short term, it might work, but long term, it won't. So I think that's a great observation for, you know, companies. If they want to succeed and they want to scale and they want to do better and help with the attrition, focus on how and what are the ways to improve that employee satisfaction.
Yeah. Understand why your employees might be frustrated, right? If you buy a new piece of technology, just because you buy 8x8 doesn't mean your contact center is going to be great, right? If you're buying it and you're not utilizing that technology to solve the specific challenges that you have, you're still going to have the same problems. It's just going to be in a shinier package, right? So understand why your employees want to leave. If attrition is a problem, let's figure out why they want to leave. And if you can't figure out why they want to leave, then let's, you know, again, you can do more homework on your own. You can work with a consultant. You can work with us. We can help you figure out where agents are going to get frustrated or why they might leave. And then when we implement a solution, we'll make sure that, hey, we're going to put some technology in place that specifically addresses the concerns that your people had, right? And we might have to tweak it or modify it 6 months down the road. It's not install it and then walk away and we never touch it again. It's a living, breathing organism, for lack of a better term, a year from now, things could be totally different. 2 years ago, we were not radically concerned about supporting work from home, right? Nope. And now we are. So things are going to keep evolving. And if you look at why people are unhappy or look at the challenges in the contact center and can pinpoint and say, that's where the bottleneck is, or that's what our core issue is here. And you start to build your solution around that. It's way more effective than just saying, well, I'm going to upgrade because I'm due for an upgrade. That's the guy who just buys a new car every 2 years. And he's, you know, because he's trying out new things. He's not going out and figuring out that's the car that I need. And then I never have to buy a new one.
Yeah. Or I'm buying a new car every 2 years because I think that'll make me happy. I mean, there's right. some people buy a new car every 2 years because they really enjoy it. But is that the truth? And is that the case for them? And obviously, right. that's great advice for organizations. I love it. And I think that's a perfect place to end on that company culture. And like you said, 2 years ago, nobody would have thought any call centers would have allowed anybody to work at home
right.
at scale. And here we are. And so, you know, having that culture of being open to change and, you know, like then you added, which is employee satisfaction. If you have yeah. that culture, they'll get through anything or adapt to anything or, you know, improve together. So I love that. Now for people listening or watching this, I know that if they want to get more information about 8x8, they can go to 8x8.com, which is the number 8x8. And the number 8 again, .com. There's a bunch of resources, a lot of things on there. If they want to find you, they can find you on LinkedIn, Tony Poor, and it's P-O-E-R. I know that you're very active on LinkedIn as well. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing kind of this technology piece and what you're seeing in the industry, especially with so much experience, and sharing this with the audience.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the scalable call center sales podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.